Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, Iowa and Midwest farmers are clearly anxious about the trade war with China. For about a year and a half, since early 2018, the Trump administration has been escalating this trade war with China. And this summer, China, you know, in our news, remember, it said it would stop purchasing American agricultural products altogether. In response, over the past year and a half, the Trump administration has relied on two financial packages amounting to roughly $28 billion in aid to help farmers who have been adversely impacted by this trade war. Later in the hour, we'll get the big picture from Chad Hart. He's an economist at Iowa State University. But first, let's hear from an Iowan working in the ag sector to see how it's affecting him and his farm. Dave Differding is one of the owners with his wife, Susan, of Timeless Prairie Orchard in Winthrop, Iowa. That's just off Highway 20 between Waterloo and Dubuque in northeast Iowa. Dave joins me in the studio. Hi, Dave.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming in. I know it's a very busy time of year. We have a new apple season. I want to ask you about that in just a moment. But first of all, tell us a little bit about your orchard. How big is it?
All right. We have a 10-acre orchard. It's my mother-in-law's farm that we planted every apple tree in the orchard ourselves. We have a high-density planting, so there are 6,000 apple trees on the 10-acre orchard. High-density dwarf apple trees, so we pick almost all the apples standing on the ground, and the high-density part of it gives us the efficiency of growing the apples using minimal sprays, and the orchard's irrigated so the trees get the nutrients that they need throughout the season.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been around? How's business been over the years?
This is our 15th year in the apple business.
Would you characterize it as a thriving business?
It is. The apples seem to grow every year, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And Mother Nature has her way about it. We say we're always dancing with Mother Nature, not knowing whether it's a waltz or a jig. But she sure throws. Well, we had the big storm last Monday night, and we had a microburst that came through and knocked down about 15 of our oldest trees.
Oh, no.
Broke
okay.
the post and have some.
Okay, so Dave, when and how did you first start to feel the impact of these tariffs?
Well, it was in the fall of 18, or the fall of 18.
2018.
Mm-hmm. We had one of our major accounts in the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area and in the Des Moines area that had purchased apples from us in the past, mainly our Honeycrisp apples that they like the best. And in the fall, when we talked to them about buying apples again for that year, they said, well, corporate has made a commitment to buying Honeycrisp apples from Washington State.
Mm.
And we found out that it was because of the tariffs and Washington State not being able to export those apples to Asia and Mexico.
So this is a real knock-on effect. Washington State couldn't export their apples because of the tariff, because of this war. They have to find a market for these apples.
Yes, and it happened to be the Midwest. And the buyer that I normally deal with said, I have over 200 bushel of Honeycrisp in my cooler from the corporate promotion that is coming on that I have to sell.
Wow.
And he said, I'd be happy to buy your apple. It's a better tasting apple. It's a better quality apple. But to put it on the shelf at a price that other people aren't going to buy it.
Okay, so what was the price difference? How much did this apple dump on the market affected in the case of Honeycrisp?
Yeah, their retail price to the customer was around $1.29 a pound at retail, and our pricing is generally in the $3 range.
Mm-hmm. When all those Washington apples came here, I guess what I'm asking is how much did it reduce the price of an apple in the grocery store?
Probably close to $2 to $3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, per pound.
Yeah.
Okay. How did this? How did you react? What did this do to your bottom line?
Well, it was pretty dramatic. We lost tens of thousands of dollars in that account. That going from hundreds of bushels that they bought in the years past to none, to zero. We also saw the effect on our other smaller specialty grocery stores that we service, because they were now competing with the $1.29 Honeycrisp in their marketplace, and so they weren't selling as many of our Honeycrisp as they would have. So it cut back on the amount of apples that we sold to those other specialty stores that we had for years.
Okay, so this has just been a loss. How have you coped? Mm-hmm. Have you recouped these losses?
We do a lot of restaurants in the area. So we really concentrated on adding some new restaurant accounts. We were not able to add any new grocery accounts because we were pretty much specialized in these specialty grocery stores with our Honeycrisp apples.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to make up for some of it, but certainly not all of it.
This is interesting because it's not, you're not being pitted against growers from outside of the country. You're being pitted against growers from here in the U.S.
Yes. Yes.
It's not like it's South American growers, as we have with so much of our produce.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Interesting. So did you contact, let your elected representatives know about how much tens of thousands of dollars that you've been losing?
We did. We talked to Senator Grassley's office and Joni Ernst's office, specifically mentioning that it wasn't so much the effect that the apples had on our business. It was the fact that we were not part of the reimbursement.
Didn't get any of this financially.
The apple industry was not offered any kind of a reimbursement for the losses from the tariffs.
The rationale being it was only for soybeans and corn?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And dairy and grapes and other commodities were on the reimbursement list, but not apples.
What was the reaction from the senators?
It was pretty cut and dried. It was like we were a corn and bean producer, and you know, yes, we understand the tariffs are having an effect, but kind of you'll get over it, or you know, I don't think they knew that the reimbursement was not included. Apples were not included in the reimbursement.
Let me quote Senator Grassley as covered by Vox News. This is an excerpt from an article they had about the trade impact here on the Midwest. Quoting Chuck Grassley, according to Vox News, farmers know that China has been cheating on international trade ever since they entered the World Trade Organization. This is, he told reporters at the Iowa State Fair. This is back in August. He noted also when he said that he hadn't talked to any farmers that wanted Trump to stop escalating tensions. He himself, a farmer, Grassley, took the aid money from the government. So you're connected with elected officials who themselves are getting aid, but
yes,
you're not,
yes,
as an Iowan apple farmer.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
So what is your feeling about that response?
Well, I feel like it should be fair across the board. I mean, if you're affected by the tariffs, you should be offered some type of a reimbursement. Unfortunately, the government has said now that, well, what we'll allow the apple producers to do is to become a vendor, and we will then buy your apples that you can't sell, and we'll give them to the food banks. We'll give them to institutions, schools, that we normally sell to on a regular basis, and now they're going to have all of these government apples coming in at probably a reduced price or a ridiculous price. So now we aren't going to be able to sell our apples to our regular customers.
Wow.
In the institutional side that we had for years.
Every turn you make, you're thwarted.
It's just like, you know, they don't seem to care.
What happens to you and your orchard with your wife, Susan, if this goes on? What's your plans?
Probably change our wholesale business to a retail market. We do a lot of farmers markets, but they're only September through October. And just to find other avenues that we can go to, maybe out of state.
Is there a question of whether you could survive?
I think we can. I mean, it's such a short season for us. September, October, we do some of the indoor winter markets in the Des Moines area during November and December. But we try not to have more than 20% of our business in one entity. And so if we do get hit by that entity, we try to find it and shift it to another mm-hmm. area.
This hour is not about the political ramifications. We've covered those in other conversations. But I have to ask you, going out, what kind of political ramifications do you think this will have on the ag community? As far as your contact is concerned, what does it tell you?
Well, our customer base is so diverse. You know, I try to keep it out of the political realm. And say, this is business, you know, and they have to realize that what they're doing to businesses across the United States and not just in Iowa is hurting everybody, and specifically us, because we didn't get the reimbursements But the other farmers that do have some of it, it's not making up for what they've lost. And the markets that they've worked years to gain are not going to come back right away. And that's going to be the long-term effect of what's happening.
Can I ask if you are or were a Trump supporter, and if your mind has been changed by what you're feeling there with your business?
Again, it's tough to be in the political side of what's going on. I think the tariffs should have been brought on by a congressional hearing rather than one individual that made that decision for the country and the effect that it's had for years. So I feel like it should be more. Our democracy isn't being run by one person, and that's why I think we need to look into what's happening in the congressional side of it. And I'm not happy, what can I say?
Dave Differding, I want to end on an up note quickly. How's the crop this year?
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Dave Differding, he owns Timeless Prairie Orchard in Winthrop, Iowa, with his wife, Susan. Thanks for stopping in, Dave. We'll let you get back to that apple crop.
Great. We've got lots of people picking today, and hopefully the rain will stay away and we can get the crop in. So
thanks.
Appreciate the time.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I want to note here that we reached out to Senator Grassley's office for an interview regarding tariffs and aid for Iowa farmers. His staff told us he was unavailable to join the program. Let's talk with Chad Hart now, Associate Professor of Economics, a crop markets specialist and extension economist at Iowa State University. Hi, Chad.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing fine. So you were listening to Dave Differding, the plight there on his apple farm in northeast Iowa. Before we get to the big picture, zero in on his story. What's your reaction in hearing that? Is that something the like you've heard before here?
It is something that I've heard before, and it's something that's sort of not surprising when you get into a trade war like we're in here. There are lots of indirect effects that end up hitting a lot of different folks in a lot of different ways. Sort of as Dave mentioned here, it's not the direct loss of the Chinese marketplace that really hurt him, but it's the displacement of those apples that used to go into that market. Where do they go? They end up competing in other markets, for example, here to the domestic market. And then you're trying to figure out, okay, this daisy chain of events that is occurring that is striking folks that are two or three levels removed from the original trade dispute.
Mm-hmm. It sort of reminds me, it's a story like this makes you realize how complex this web of international trade is, trade within our country and trade around the world. And when you tinker with one part, and in this case, it's more than tinkering, this trade war, it has repercussions throughout.
It definitely does. And that's what made probably USDA's job so hard as they looked at building that program that Dave was talking about there. You know, trying to figure out which crops or which, you know, agricultural commodities have really gotten hurt here. How do we reimburse folks? It's definitely an imprecise science.
Do you happen to know why apples were left out, dairy compensated, beans, corn?
In this case, it goes back to, it wasn't something Congress did, but it was a USDA choice. And it's based upon the models they have at USDA looking at, in this case, the direct loss of markets in China due to the trade dispute. They tried to target to those commodities that they felt were the most impacted, but they couldn't figure out all the possible commodities that were. And so there were definitely farmers and commodities that were left off the list that have been impacted by the trade war.
Chad, we have about 90 seconds before we're going to take a break. I want you to react to the latest news over the weekend. Actually from Friday, China saying that it was canceling some planned tariff increases on American soybeans and pork. Chinese importers in recent days resuming, according to reports, resuming purchases of American soybeans for the first time since this spring. What's your read on that?
Well, in this case, it's sort of we've been doing sort of two steps forward, two steps back with China as you look at resolving this trade dispute. And this is those two steps forward. Now I'm waiting to see, will we take those back again? We've been through several waves of this sort of positive news followed by a pullback and then positive news again and a pullback again. And so until we get to some sort of written agreement, it's hard to say what this is going to mean in the long term.
Does this little dance or this reduction of tensions, does that tell you anything about what's going on with the negotiations? I know we're quite a ways away from it and removed.
Well, I think it shows that we're still talking, but it's really hard to say whether it's, you know, we're truly moving forward or not, just because each time we've had such a positive signal before, we've taken that step back again.
Okay, Chad, stay with us in our AIM studio. Extension economist at Iowa State University, Chad's expertise will be needed in our second half hour when we'll also talk with a corn and bean farmer, also the former Iowa Soybean Association president, Lindsay Grainer. So stay tuned for that. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Let's get back to this conversation about the impact of the trade war, the tariffs that have been escalating since early, the spring of 2018. The latest on that, China now says it will exempt soybeans and pork from its latest round of tariffs. Still, Iowa farmers, and if you know Iowa farmers, you know they remain anxious out there because the end of the story has not been written. Chad Hart is with us in our AIM studio, Associate Professor of Economics and Crop Market Specialist, as well as Extension Economist at Iowa State University, lending us his analysis and his thoughts. In the last half hour, we heard from an apple grower in northeast Iowa who, due to indirect effects of these tariffs, a lot of Washington State Honeycrisp apples on the market, their apple crop didn't have its usual buyer. That created a lot of problems and a loss to this specific orchard of tens of thousands of dollars. Chad Hart, quickly tell us, when we talk about all these different commodities produced in Iowa and the Midwest, how can you say how have markets been responding, corn, beans, and so forth?
Well, we've seen some significant losses. When you're looking at the corn and bean markets, for example, prices are down 10 to 20%. A lot of that is due to the trade war. When we're looking at exports for both commodities, down roughly 17% year over year. We've also seen some issues within the livestock industry. And livestock, it's been, especially the pork industry, has been interesting because there's been the drag from the trade war. At the same time, they've seen some increased demand coming out of China due to African swine fever. And so it's a little harder to disentangle what's going on with the livestock industry. But when we're looking overall, we've seen definitely a drop in net farm income for our state of Iowa farmers here, and that same thing happening across the nation, with some of that being made up for by those market facilitation payments that were talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk in those a little bit more detail, but I want to welcome also on to our program, Lindsay Grainer is with us, former Iowa Soybean Association president. Lindsay has about 1,000-acre farm near Keota in southeast Iowa, a soybean and corn farmer. If I got that right, Lindsay, welcome to the program.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Quickly, tell us a little bit about your farm near Keota.
Well, I've been farming for about 40 years. I have a son that farms with me. He has a separate farm operation, but we work together, and we grow corn and soybeans, and then we contract feed hogs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, take us back to the point in time when you first felt the impact of these escalating tariffs. Would that have been directly in the spring of 2018 when they were imposed?
Yeah, it would have been. We were looking at prices pre-trade war that were, in the $10 to $11 per bushel range. And as soon as the trade war started, why, over about a two-month period, we saw the soybean market drop by about $2 a bushel. So if you still had beans in the bin, you definitely felt the impact.
Mm-hmm. And you, as well as Chad, can draw a direct line from that dropping market to this trade war? There's no doubt in your mind?
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we lost a lot of demand when this trade war started. Now, since the trade war started, we did grow a huge soybean crop a year ago, and that added to our surpluses. So we're looking at a pretty large carryout, which, you know, a trade war had impact on that because you lose your biggest customer and you just, you're not moving beans like you were. So, so you add in a big crop in with a trade war, and it was a recipe for depressed prices.
So, Lindsay, explain that a little bit more. You said you used the term carry out and your storage there. Most of us are not farmers. So you have farmers will put some of their crop, if they don't like the price at the moment, they'll put it in storage. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah. So you know, we'll grow a crop. And if Mother Nature cooperates, we have a large crop. And so as a farmer, you wait for a good price, a price that you can be profitable. And sometimes you get that price, and sometimes you wait and wait, and you don't. And not all of the crop gets sold. So the portion of the crop that remains in storage that doesn't get sold, that's your carryover. Mm-hmm. And in a normal year, for United States soybeans, we would have a carryover or an unsold portion of beans that probably would be in the 200 to 400 million bushel range. Right now, we're going in this current market year with probably a carryover of 900 million to a billion bushels of soybeans, and that is burdensome on a market. So we're looking at prices that are well below break even.
And right, I assume when you have so many beans in storage, too, you have to, well, worry about their welfare. For instance, we had beans in western Iowa that were flooded, and those crops were lost, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was a tremendous disaster over in that part of the state. You know, not only did they lose the ability to farm some of their ground, but they had grain bins that got flooded and split open and just completely lost their crop that they were planning to sell. So it's pretty devastating for some farmers over in that area.
So, Lindsay, how have you coped with the dropping prices there in soybeans and corn?
Well, I think the first way you start to cope is you have to bring your expenses down somewhere. You have to either try and find somewhere where you can buy your inputs for a lower price. Maybe you try and renegotiate a rental agreement with the landlord to get a reduced rental rate. You put off machinery purchases. You try and maybe do more of your maintenance yourself rather than to hire it done. Just anywhere that you can cut, you have to look at ways to cut expenses.
Mm-hmm. And if you needed a big piece of machinery, maybe you put that off until better times.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of that. I think I did hear a report that combine sales were up, large tractor sales were up a little bit, which really surprised me. I know I'm not planning any new machinery purchases on my farm. We're just kind of in survival mode, I would say, right now.
Mm-hmm. Chad, did you read about that? Do you have any thoughts on the machinery here, the investment there in farm machinery?
Well, one of the things we're seeing is, as Lindsay sort of mentioned, the idea is that we've gone through a period of time where we've had several large crops in a row, and so the ag economy's been depressed not just the last year or two, but it's been over the past 4 or 5. And we have seen some farmers take whatever money they've got left available now to refresh that machinery that hasn't been refreshed over the past 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Lindsay, past your farm, and as I mentioned at the outset, you're former president of the Iowa Soybean Association, so you have connections with a lot of Iowa farmers here. How widespread is this impact, the pain here? What do you hear from others in the farming community?
Well, I think early on in this trade war that farmers were supportive. They said, well, you know, maybe we have been getting taken advantage of over the years when it comes to trade with China. And so there was support. And I think that maybe this has drug on long enough that some of the support is dwindling a little bit. But I will say the market facilitation program payments have helped. Especially soybean farmers a year ago, that was $1.65. So, you know, we were looking at prices about $2 a bushel less than they were a year ago. And so you take the lower price, you add the $1.65 in, And so the amount of hurt or pain felt by soybean farmers was really dramatically reduced with that market facilitation payment. And I think that this year, you know, we've already gotten the first of that payment, and that takes some of the sting out. And I think so there's still support in farm country, but I think there's that farmers are running out of patience. And the other factor that where farmers are really worried about is the possibility or the opportunity to get these markets back that we've spent 30 years trying to develop.
Right, because let's say a trade agreement is made tomorrow. This is not like a rubber band, is it, Lindsay? It doesn't just spring right back into place, does it?
No, I don't think it does. And I kind of look at it like, let's just bring it down to a small scale, and you're doing business with somebody and just a local person, and you start getting in a little feud about who's buying, who's going to buy from who, and what the price is. I think there's going to be some, for lack of a better word, hurt feelings when this trade war does get over, and a little bit of reluctance to go back to doing business in the same volumes that we were before.
Mm-hmm. We hope that the trade war is settled soon, Chad Hart. What do you think about that point? What happens after, hopefully soon, an agreement is reached? Does Lindsay have more or less what you think about it as well?
Well, no, that's definitely the case. We have seen in trade disputes in the past that, yeah, things don't just snap back like a rubber band. There tends to be a long, slow process to recovering those markets again, and usually you don't get back quite to where you were pre-dispute.
And there is in international trade, Chad, I imagine if you're looking for like a source of soybeans or corn, you want a reliable source. You want a good quality. You want a good price. But you want a reliable partner.
You definitely want a reliable partner. And that's one of the biggest challenges here as we look at developing international trade relations here, is that reliability is of utmost concern. And so the minute they start to, a customer starts to question whether you're going to be a reliable partner, you tend to see that erosion of that market share.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Chad Hart of Iowa State University, an economist there. Lindsay Grainer is a soybean and corn farmer in southeast Iowa. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Tell us how the trade war is impacting your farm business. We have a few minutes left to talk. 1-866-780-9100. Chad, explain a little bit more what Lindsay was talking about here on the financial aid from the Trump administration. Where did that aid come from? How much is it? How widespread are the distributions of that aid?
Well, we're looking at, in this case, there's sort of, if you will, two separate payments that have come out from the administration. They both come out of the USDA's, what's it called, the Commodity Credit Corporation. You can think of it as like USDA's bank, where they have roughly $30 billion each year to utilize in sort of emergency situations. But it's something that is not called upon very often. That bank account, if you will, has been set up since the 1930s. We've called on it probably six or seven times over that course of time. What they did was they basically set up some payments in 2018. Lindsay mentioned that there for soybeans, for example, that was $1.65 a bushel. Each commodity got a separate payment, if you will, there. Here in 2019, instead of paying by the bushels or the units of production, they paid by acreage. And so as long as you planted one of 23 crops, that acreage qualified for a payment this year.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to the farmers' thinking here. And you said at the beginning, Lindsay, that many of the farmers, as far as you could gauge them as a former Iowa Soybean Association president, were on board with righting what many see. I think there's a consensus of wrongs in trading that China has been conducting there. Explain, though, the reasoning of a farmer who is suffering, and in some cases suffering quite dramatically financially from this trade war, yet still supports the tariffs.
Well, that gets a little hard to explain. I think that farmers realize that in the long term, it's probably not going to be good to continue unfair trading practices. And I think the hope was when this started that, hey, you know, they've been a good customer. As far as soybeans go, they've been a really good customer. Maybe we can get a new trade deal that's has a little more accountability as far as where China comes in, you know, the do away with the theft of intellectual property and maybe come out with a deal that's even better than we had before, rules that can be enforceable and it's good for everybody. I think some of the hope for that is maybe fading a little bit because like Chad said earlier, it's like two steps forward and he said two steps back. Sometimes I'd say two and a half steps back. But I think that there's still support, but patience is running out. But I said that several months ago. So I think that the market facilitation payments help strengthen or maintain farm country support. I don't know how long you can continue to do that. I think farmers would much rather have a trade deal in place and resume doing business as usual than to get government payments.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about that, about the politics of this, Lindsay. I'm sure you talk politics with enough of the ag community, and of course the rural Iowa, a big base of support for Donald Trump when he was elected in 2016. Do you see erosion there? Do you see farmers, hear farmers saying, you know, I voted for Trump in 2016, not so sure or definitely not this next time around? Do you hear any of that?
Well, a little bit. You know, usually when a group of farmers get together, the talk of politics is not that prevalent. We're talking about weather and yields and pests and the different things that are going on the farm. But if you do get into politics, it's more limited to, well, what do you think of this Democratic candidate, or what do you think about Trump doing this now? But I think the support has waned a little bit in farm country when it comes to the current administration. But I think they're looking for some. If there's somebody better, they're interested. But I don't think anybody's come into focus yet that has the answers that farmers want to hear.
Lindsay, may I ask about your politics? If you were a Trump, you are or were a Trump supporter. If you will continue to be, as far as you can tell.
Well, I voted for Trump in the last election. This upcoming election, there's just a lot of politics to take place yet. So I really haven't decided what I'll do in the next presidential election.
It sounds like, and also your characterization of others, it will depend a lot upon who is the Democratic nominee.
I think so. And I think there's just so many Democratic candidates yet that it's really hard to find a clear front runner. So I think maybe as the Democrats weed themselves out, there'd be a little clearer choice.
What has the conversation been like, Lindsay, with you and other farmers with our elected officials? Have you been receiving satisfactory responses to your concerns?
I think there's a real, I don't know if I want to use dissatisfaction with elected officials, but a lot of concern. You know, we've had USMCA, which is, from all indications, is a very good trade deal, especially for farmers, especially for agriculture. And there's been no action on it. And I think there's a real frustration on the part of farmers that nothing has been done about that. We've had a lot of conversations with elected officials and made it pretty clear that we would like to see the USMCA get ratified. And, you know, we're hopeful maybe here in the next few weeks that'll happen. There's another issue that has created quite a bit of dissatisfaction with farmers, and that is the small refinery waivers that have just really put a hardship on biodiesel producers and ethanol plants. We've had quite a bit of demand or demand loss in renewable fuels, and a lot of those renewable fuel plants have been built or invested in by farmers, and you know, when you're looking at trade wars that have taken our prices down, and then small refiner waivers on top of that, it seems to me, and I think a lot of farmers would agree, that if we could do away with these small refiner waivers and get some of that renewable fuel demand back, that would help our prices, and then maybe we wouldn't have to rely on government payments.
Comment on that, Chad. That's another dimension that Lindsay opened up. We have a couple minutes here left. Talk about these waivers. These waivers are what?
These waivers are basically given to small refineries that can petition to show that, okay, if we have to use biofuels in their mix, that they would be financially hurt by that, and such, you know, to such an extent that they might go out of business. The question really here has been that these waivers that are issued through the Environmental Protection Agency as part of the Renewable Fuel Standard, they've often gone to small refineries, but a part of larger companies, so they're like your Exxon Mobils, your Koch brothers, you know, your bigger entities overall, but they have small locations that have gotten these. What these waivers do, though, is they reduce the demand for biofuels, and it sort of forces, like, the Apple argument again. We're producing a fuel, and then you're searching for where's the market I can put it in when my first market that I normally go to is gone.
Mm-hmm. Comment, Chad, as well about the United States-Mexico-Canada trade deal. Now, the president renegotiated the North America Free Trade Agreement. And this is this new agreement is in limbo, or where is it?
It's hanging in limbo right now, and as Lindsay Starr mentioned here, this one's sitting in front of Congress right now. So the three sides, the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, have agreed to a deal in principle. Now it's up to each legislature in each country to approve it. Mexico, I know, has, I believe Canada is on its way to, or at least debating it, and so we're waiting for the U.S. to make the first move. And right now, the bill is basically sitting in front of the U.S. House, waiting for them to move on voting on it or not.
Mm-hmm. Lindsay, before we say goodbye to you, what will you be watching in the coming weeks? Just watching the news like all the rest of us, or do you look in another place?
Well, I'm really hopeful that the Congress will take up USMCA and get it passed. I think that would be a nice little boost to the morale of farmers to know that at least we got one deal done. And then hopefully I'd really like to see progress on an agreement between the U.S. and China.
Lindsay Grainer is a soybean and corn farmer, also former Iowa Soybean Association president. Lindsay, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Chad Hart has been with us as well from Iowa State University, associate professor of economics, crop market specialist, and extension economist. Chad, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.